Okay.
Delusions of Grandeur.
Hey everybody, we're back here for another episode of Delusions of Grandeur, our journey into Star Wars here on the Journey Into podcast. For a little while, everybody gets delusions of grandeur. My name is Marshall Latham, and Rish Outfield and I are here to talk about some more Star Wars.
That's what we do. It's all we do.
What's the Wolverine line? I'm the best there is at what I do, and what I do isn't nice, or whatever.
It's true. We don't do a very nice job here on our podcast. but we do a Star Wars podcast.
Yeah, I think in the listing of Star Wars podcasts, we rank about 1,212.
Ooh, that's bad. I would have hoped we were a little better than that. Maybe we should end this episode early.
Oh, maybe it's 812. I don't know.
Okay, I can live with that.
But there's a lot of different things we wanted to talk about on this episode of the podcast. One of the things is not being a timely podcast, but I don't think it matters if we cover the news as soon as it comes out, because, you know, we have over a year before episode 9 comes out, and that's the only movie that's in development right now or production. So we have a lot of time to talk about different things, and so we don't have to jump on here the day the news comes out and give you our breakdown, because everybody else is doing that. So we can wait a little bit and think about it, and we'll eventually talk about it here on the podcast. So I don't know how long it's been, but several weeks ago there was casting announcements. I guess they've begun production on episode 9, and a lot of the cast has been revealed probably ahead of leaks that might have come out anyway, because there's people that follow everybody and see who's going to Pinewood and all that kind of stuff. But StarWars.com came out with the press release of cast members for episode 9. So I'll just kind of read through that a little bit to start out, and then we can talk about it. It says, returning cast members include Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Lupita Nyong'o, Domhnall Gleeson, Kelly Marie Tran, Jonas Suotamo. No, what is that? Suotamo?
That's Chewbacca.
Yeah,
right?
Chewbacca. And Billy Lord. Joining the cast of episode 9 are Naomi Aki, Richard E. Grant, and Kerry Russell, who will be joined by veteran Star Wars actors Mark Hamill, Anthony Daniels, and Billy Dee Williams, who will reprise his role as Lando Calrissian. So maybe we should digest that a little bit. Anything surprising or shocking to you about that part of it?
I mean, I think we probably could talk about each one of these names.
Sure.
The first name that you named, I don't recognize. But I know Richard E. Grant and I know Kerry Russell.
Of the new cast members.
Right, of the new cast members. Yeah, the only surprising return, and it's not really surprising, but Kelly Marie Tran is back as Resistance Tech Rose.
Yay!
And I think I'm the only person that likes her. I hear a lot of people dislike her, and I know that people were really loud and unpleasant about their dislike for her, and it got back to her, and that's not cool.
No, not cool at all.
But the end of that movie of Last Jedi, boy, I mean, it seemed like she was dead, but they made a point to get her on the Millennium Falcon, and Finn is looking, you know, concernedly at her, and she's alive. And so to see her again in the next movie, well, that's good. I don't know where they're going to go with that, but I'm glad that the actress is coming back. And I mean, the people that don't like her are not going to like her no matter what they do.
Yeah.
I was about to say, I hope that there are people that get swayed and say, you know, I didn't like her much in that first movie, but I sure like her in the third one. I don't know that that's going to happen.
Well, and unfortunately, she's a female character. And that's a problem for some people, I guess. And I, you know, I don't say that very often. I mean, sometimes, like the Ghostbusters movie, if you didn't like that movie or didn't want to go see it, it was because, oh, well, it's women and you don't like women. But most of the comments I've heard against the character of Rose is that she's a woman that is introduced that makes the character of Finn seem weaker somehow or whatever. But like we talked about a few episodes ago, I think we've both kind of agreed with some of the criticism of Holdo as a character. But yeah, I don't think there was anything bad or negative about Kelly Marie Tran or the character of Rose. I kind of liked how they built up her character with the with her sister that died in the, you know, trying to take down the dreadnought ship of the Empire or the First Order. I kind of liked that story building there, and I thought she was a great character. So it's interesting what people do and don't like, but I'm glad she's back.
Yeah, I'm glad she's back too. In our most recent episode, I think we talked about Wedge and the fact that Dennis Lawson comes back in the three Star Wars movies made him really special.
Yeah.
And it was really cool that he came back. And so anybody that you can have come back, I like that. Why not have people come back, have the same faces instead of just new rebel leaders in each movie or whatever? And plus there are places you can go with that character, and who knows what they will do.
Yeah.
And who knows how injured she is, and will she hit it off with Rey? Will they decide to give her a noble death or let her ride off into the sunset? Who knows?
Or just be there, you know, just be not necessarily one of the main characters, but just, you know, be there as part of the support for stuff that's going on.
Yeah. We appreciate seeing 3PO again in R2-D2. Even if they...
Nine Numb.
Absolutely. Admiral Ackbar. Holy cow. I'm still so thrilled that he got to come back for Force Awakens.
Yeah.
You know, it's the benefit of a sequel is a lot of the work, the heavy lifting has already been done. And you just see this guy and you're like, oh, hey, I already know who this guy is. And now you can take off running in a new direction or repeat the stuff that you've done. Either or.
Yeah.
Or you can unceremoniously kill him in his very first scene. But give him a line first.
Yes.
Sorry, that seemed critical of Last Jedi. I don't mean to be critical of Last Jedi, because goodness knows
If you like Last Jedi, you can't have any criticisms of it. And if you don't like Last Jedi, you can't agree that anything was good in the movie. it's one way or the other. So.
Wow, there was a little bit of attitude from you there, Marshall. And yes, I do not mean that I don't like Last Jedi because I have a problem with aspects of it. Yes, you can love something and admit that it has flaws.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess we're talking about Resistance Tech Rose here, but she is the poster child for what people hate about that movie. And or Luke with the blue milk or whatever dripping down his chin. I like that poster child a lot more. I'm glad that she's come back. You know, George Lucas got a lot of criticism about Jar Jar Binks in Phantom Menace. And his solution was, well, we'll just get rid of him.
Yeah.
So let's just be grateful that they had her back. And who knows what J.J. Abrams will do with the character.
Yeah. I guess, what do you think of Kerry Russell coming into as a cast member?
Well, Kerry Russell has a history with J.J. Abrams because of Felicity. That was, I think, J.J.'s first show as a showrunner or an executive producer. And it was quite successful. I want to say that it was the WB. It was quite successful at first and made a star out of her. And then, yeah, he brought her back for one of the Mission Impossible movies that he produced.
Number 3, I think.
Which he actually directed as like the pupil or protege of Tom Cruise's character. And so I think that was neat. I have no issue with Kerry Russell. I think she's fine.
Do you have any speculation as to who she'll play?
Probably she is going to be a placeholder for Leia I imagine that some of the business that Princess Leia was going to do in Episode 9 has been divvied up to other characters. You know, Billy Lord is back.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they gave some of General Leia's business to Billy Lord's character. They, you know, they killed Holdo. But if they hadn't, then I think almost all of Leia's business would have gone to Holdo in Episode 9.
Sure.
Because their characters serve similar roles. A leader within the Resistance. But I don't know. I could be totally surprised and Kerry Russell is an alien, or Kerry Russell is a bad guy, or Kerry Russell is a contact that they meet on some world, or, you know, or she is there on whatever planet they have to relocate to because the First Order is hot on their heels. I don't know.
Well, see, I thought it'd be cool if she ended up being one of the Knights of Ren.
Oh, that would be interesting. Are we going to see the fudging Knights of Ren now?
I hope so. I'd really love to see one of the first scenes of the movie be Kylo Ren, you know, assembling together with the Knights of Ren at some First Order headquarters or whatever, and saying, okay, we have a mission to fulfill, and you need to do this, sending them out on assignments or whatever. I don't know if we'll get anything like that, but I always thought that'd be kind of cool. One of the things that was set up and not followed up on that I think would be neat to see, who are these Knights of Ren and what are they all about, or were they all killed, or, you know, what's going on with these guys?
Were they not the followers, the third of the hosts of heaven that were cast down with Kylo Ren that chose to go with him when Ben Solo fell to the dark side?
That's my understanding. And they killed the rest of the Jedi that Luke was teaching. But we haven't seen these other Knights of Ren, so I don't know what they're all about.
Yeah, it seems like a plot hole that needs to be addressed, but you never know if that will be something. I mean, yeah, so Kylo Ren is now leader of the First Order, right? But what do they call him now? He is Grand Supreme Leader. And so, yeah, is there a home world, a place where the First Order calls itself home, or was that Starkiller Base?
I think that probably was Starkiller Base, so I don't know where they've moved to.
But those Knights of Ren were nowhere to be found on Starkiller Base.
Yeah. So
I don't know. How will their reaction be to know that Snoke is dead?
Yeah.
And that, well, did Kylo Ren kill Snoke? Or is the story that the girl Rey killed Snoke and everybody believes that? You know, I'm assuming if these people are strong with the Force, they may know exactly what happened to Snoke. And was Snoke their master as well? Or was Kylo Ren their master? I believe he's referred to as leader of the Knights of Ren.
Or was that their plan all along, was to eventually kill Snoke and take power?
This is something that they could address, or of course it could just not ever be addressed.
we shall see.
But yeah, that is not something I would have expected, to find out that Kerry Russell is one of the Knights of Ren, that she is a dark Jedi.
Yeah.
But I would be thrilled to see that. I was like, wow, okay, I wouldn't, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be awesome. Some of the other speculation, of course, everybody says, oh, Rey's mom, for some reason. She's not that much older, I guess.
Oh, are we still banging on that drum?
Yeah, there's still people trying to figure out that. And then,
but these are the same people on the playground that used to beat you up and say, no, Darth Vader's not Luke's father. No, give me your lunch money.
Yeah. Well, I was one of the people saying that, but I wasn't one of the people. I wasn't beating anybody up over it.
All right. But, you know, I have a sworn affidavit here from three other elementary school children that says otherwise. Okay. So Richard E. Grant, you know who he is, right? He's a British actor.
I don't.
He's middle-aged now, but he would always be in comedies. I think he was in Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Okay.
He's distinctive. He often plays bad guys. He was on Downton Abbey. That was the most recent thing I saw him. And he was a villain on that show. Gosh, I don't know what you may have seen him in. He's one of those guys where you're like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
He's been in everything. You've seen him in a bunch of things. They're never the star of whatever you're watching. He's a character actor. And I can't imagine he's playing a good guy.
Yeah, he seems like he'd be First Order or something like that.
Domhnall Gleeson, who plays General Hux, he's one of those guys that could go either way. In fact, I almost feel like it's casting against type that Domhnall Gleeson was the leader of these bad guys in Force Awakens. Because he's got a very affable face and personality. There's a likability to him. You know, he was in the Harry Potter movies, or at least one and a half of them. And he was in, that Peter Rabbit abomination that came out recently. But Richard E. Grant, you just see his face and you're like, oh, hey, there's your bad guy. That's the killer. And so, yeah, I just assume he is a villain. I heard somebody say, oh, he's going to be Grand Admiral Thrawn. But yeah, there's no chance Thrawn is going to show up on this thing. It's too late.
Yeah.
You bring him in from the beginning if he's going to be in this.
Yeah. You don't bring him in on the last part of the trilogy when they're trying to do their best to tie up all the loose ends. And at least I think that's what they're trying to do. And bring everybody back to happy Star Wars.
But speaking of bringing everybody back, Billy Dee Williams. Gosh, I can't imagine anybody being unhappy to hear that Billy Dee Williams is coming back.
Yeah.
He should have been in Force Awakens. I never got an explanation for why he wasn't. I think on this show I once asked you, well, is Lando dead in the era of The Force Awakens? And we didn't know.
Yeah, I think he did.
But clearly he's not. And I got to say, some of the business that Princess Leia was supposed to do in that script could have been given to Lando, and that's fine. We need somebody that we love.
Yeah.
Somebody who has the experience, who's been there, who is an original trilogy character, and with Carrie Fisher gone, yeah, why not give him a chance to do stuff? I it's just a shame that he wasn't there from the very beginning. Lando could have been the guy. Yeah. Who piloted the Star, the rebel ship, whatever you call it, into the Star Destroyer.
Sure, yeah.
It's just Lando is a beloved core character, and I don't, because he wasn't in the first movie, I guess people sometimes forget, but it is a shame that he wasn't in there, and I hope they give him a heck of a lot to do, because Lando can be a Han Solo proxy as well.
He can be, yeah.
And with Han dead, anything that Han might have done if he weren't dead, Lando can do.
Yeah, and he might even go back to piloting the Millennium Falcon.
Huh. Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, maybe not full time, but that'd be neat to see him with Chewie and, you know, see what he thinks of Rey and that kind of thing. Because, you know, who does he have to relate to now that Han is dead and...
But Luke is also dead.
And Luke is also dead, right.
Even though they didn't have a lot of scenes together, Luke and Lando had a good relationship, and they were friends, and they were part of the Rebel Alliance together and had adventures that we didn't see.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully we'll see a scene between Lando and Chewie. And even though it's not Peter Mayhew in the suit, it's still Chewie. And Billy Dee is alive. And when I saw that he wasn't in Force Awakens, I my first assumption was health reasons. Oh, well, he must be, you know, he's a little bit older than some of these guys, and he's not forever hardy like Harrison Ford. So yeah, maybe he's just not well enough to be Lando. But that was not the case. I saw him at the Solo. He went to the Solo premiere and everybody wanted to interview him, and everybody asked him the question over and, oh my gosh, how many times was Billy Dee asked? what do you think of Donald Glover as Lando? But yeah, clearly he is young enough, he's healthy enough that he can act, and so it'll be cool to see what they do with him.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. And yeah, I guess it would be a reunion with him and Nine Numb as well. So going back to him. Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry, man. There is no way that they will take advantage of that. They won't even acknowledge that.
Probably not.
Somebody would have had to love Nine Numb the way that my buddy Dennis loved Nine Numb to say, oh yeah, we'll have a scene where those two together. And Nine Numb goes, and Lando goes, don't you start with me.
He says, hey, man, gives him a high five. Well, so yeah, one of the other listed actors here, of course, is Mark Hamill, which...
Wow.
He's gone, right? He died.
That surprised the heck out of me, just because I felt like if he is in the movie, that you want to keep that a surprise. The same way that Yoda was a surprise for Last Jedi.
Yeah.
I was tickled pink to see Yoda. I was tickled green, actually, to see Yoda again in Last Jedi, and that he was a puppet, and that it was Frank Oz again. Oh my gosh. You watched the DVD or the Blu-ray. Well, it had to be the Blu-ray, because DVDs don't include special features anymore. Dang it.
Yeah.
But to see Frank Oz manipulating the puppet again?
Yeah.
Was just so, so neat. Anyhow, I just, yeah, I figure if Luke is showing up as a Force ghost, then they ought to keep that a surprise to us. But no, makes me wonder.
Yeah, and you never know, you know, if he's going to have a major role, or it could be flashback scenes, or it could be, you know, who knows what they're going to do there. I'm hoping that, like you said, he's around as a Force ghost and he's talking to Rey and maybe even Kylo, haunting Kylo or something like that.
A pesky Force ghost.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see how much he's in the movie.
Well, in Force Awakens, we get a very, very short flashback with Luke.
Yeah.
And in Last Jedi, we get several of the same scenes flashed back, and it would be very fun if they did that again in the third movie, flashing back to the same moment, the fall to the dark side of Ben Solo and the destruction of Luke's Jedi school. And if you're right and Kerry Russell is one of those, then why not flash back and show that she was, you know, Luke's favorite or most talented student, or the one that didn't have any dark side in her.
Yeah.
And it's like, Ben, why can't you be more like Kerry Russell's character?
Mara.
And she turns to the dark side too, or she chooses to go join the Knights of Ren rather than be exterminated as the others are, or whatever. I think that we still have gaps in that story that could be filled in with a flashback. I don't know that they're going to do it, but it's a great way to bring Luke back and to show it early, early on, maybe the first or second scene in the movie, so that you're like, oh, okay, that's why Mark Hamill's name's in the credits. All right. So it's a big surprise when the Force ghost shows up later.
Yeah. And maybe Kerry Russell's character is named Mara.
Oh, has there been speculation that she is Mara Jade?
Well, yeah, there was a casting call for a female character named Mara. Some people say that could just be J.J. Abrams, you know, throwing another red herring out there.
Yeah. Oh, a red. That is J.J.'s way, isn't it?
Yeah.
The thing is, if she is Mara Jade, if she is a long-lost wife of Luke Skywalker, then yeah, there would have been no casting call at all.
Right.
J.J. would have just called Kerry Russell at home and said, sorry to wake you. Would you like to play Luke's wife in this next Star Wars movie? The Jurassic World guy is not doing it after all.
Colin Trevorrow?
I told you never to say that name! Okay, yeah, so I don't know what Luke is going to be doing in the movie, but I'm very happy to see him back, too.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully, you know, they give him more to do than they did in Force Awakens.
That's funny. They gave Simon Pegg more to do than
I always think about that. You know, they made a big thing about, you know, with the first table read, you know, and they took that black and white picture of all the cast and everything. And, you know, they told about how Mark Hamill was the narrator and he read through the whole story. And I can just imagine, you know, and he's talked about it at some points, just what he was thinking. He's reading this whole thing or being the narrator, and then he's not even in the movie for more than a minute. That just always makes me laugh.
I would love to see that table read. I wish that had been on the disc.
Oh, that
yeah. I would have sat and watched the 2 hours of them going through that script. And I probably would have watched it again and again. Because it makes you appreciate a movie more when you just, you read the script or an early version of the script. I'm assuming that you have seen like a table read of an animated show, like where the Simpsons cast sits down and does a table read. And those are fascinating.
Sure. Man, that would be worth gold right there. I just remember how exciting it was to just look at that cast and, oh, who are these new people? And, oh, there's Harrison Ford. Oh, who is he sitting next to? And all that. That was pretty cool.
I guess it's not too late. Star Wars has been infamous, is that the fair way to say, for making you buy it over and over and over again. And so they already did re-release Force Awakens once, where you had to buy it again if you wanted to hear that J.J. Abrams commentary, which we did a whole episode about.
Yeah.
And so...
Two.
Yeah, they're, once the trilogy is done, they could just re-release it in a boxed set with all sorts of extra features, and I would certainly buy it again.
Probably. I would too.
Okay. Is there anybody else that we haven't mentioned? I mean, yeah, okay, Anthony Daniels is back, and I'm glad that he's back. I hope they give him a lot to do, but I loved him in Last Jedi just for the way he said Master Luke at the end of that movie. Oh my gosh. Is there anybody we're forgetting?
Not that we've talked about so far. Like you said, I don't know anything about Naomi Ackie.
Well, did you look her up? Has she been in anything that we would have seen? And Gwendolyn Christie's name is not on the list. She is not coming back, right?
She's not coming back. So, see, I didn't even know she was African-American.
Wait, say that. What's her name? Should I be looking her up? Or
she was in Yardie. I've heard about that movie a little bit, but I've never seen it. No, she's fairly new. Her first actress credit is in 2015.
Oh, okay.
She was in an episode of Doctor Who.
Okay, well, I've got the press release here in front of me, and what's her name?
Naomi Ackie.
And it says here, Naomi Ackie is playing another character for fanboys to complain about.
Oh.
So I'm looking forward to that. Yeah,
that's great. That'll take some of the pressure off Kelly Marie Tran.
But no mention of JJ's buddy that's in all of his movies that was on Alias.
Oh, I know who you're talking about, but I can't think of
it. I want to say Greg something. Grunberg. Is that his name?
Yeah, Greg Grunberg. I was trying to think of the name. Is it Sam Wexley or something like that? Isn't that his name in Star Wars? Force Awakens?
Snap Wexley.
Snap, right? Wexley. There you go.
He had a fairly big part in Force Awakens.
He did. I don't know if we talked about this, but... you know, he talked about how when he was doing his X-Wing scenes, they kept trying to get him to say, oh, I'm going down or whatever. And he refused because he didn't want to be one of the people that died on the run.
Oh, that's hilarious. Like the assistant director is like, well, hey, it's in the script. You've got Greg, please. And he's like, JJ is my best friend. He's the director. I'm not going to do it. Yeah. What is he going to do?
So he definitely could be back.
Well, it just surprises me that he's not. I mean, where was he during Last Jedi?
Yeah.
But obviously he's whatever planet Lando is on.
Right. And he didn't get to hear the call when they call people. Okay, so the next part of the official press release here on StarWars.com also talks about Princess Leia. It says, the role of Leia Organa will once again be played by Carrie Fisher, using previously unreleased footage shot for Star Wars The Force Awakens. We desperately loved Carrie Fisher, says J.J. Abrams. Finding a truly satisfying conclusion to the Skywalker saga without her eluded us. We were never going to recast or use a CG character. With the support and blessing of her daughter, Billy, we have found a way to honor Carrie's legacy and role as Leia in Episode 9 by using unseen footage we shot for Episode 7.
Well, I feel like we've had this conversation before, you know, like when she died, talking about what do you do in Episode 9 and what should they have done in Episode 8. But how much footage could there be from Force Awakens?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
it doesn't seem like she could have a significant role. And even if there was like 6 minutes of Leia scenes that they shot, you have to rewrite your script or rejigger those scenes so they fit. And it derails whatever story you're trying to tell. Can't they just have somebody who can do a Leia voice, dub in lines for her or whatever, and we see footage of Leia that they shot in Force Awakens. But then I feel like you're recreating a performance. Why not just do a CG Carrie Fisher?
You know, it could just be simply establishing where she is, you know, on a planet or on a ship or something, and then something happens on that ship or planet where she's killed. You know, I don't know if she would be throughout the, she can't be through the entire movie unless, you know, she's the one that's on an island somewhere in the galaxy like Luke was. But it'll be interesting to see. You know, my suggestion was, well, just put it in the crawl that, you know, Princess Leia has died, and then move on from there. But evidently they're going to do a little bit more there. But yeah, is she going to be wearing the same outfit she was wearing on the planet?
I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
it was some kind of uniform. It was like gray and or purple. I can't remember. No.
Or they could Green Lantern her, and she's not CG, but all of her clothes are.
Again, if you're going to do stuff like that, or if you're going to animate the lips so that it matches new dialogue or whatever, then it ceases to be footage from Force Awakens that you're using, and it becomes something new.
Yeah.
And I understand that they're walking on eggshells there, that they want to be respectful, but the character deserves to be in this movie. The character deserves to do something important and not just be off on some ship.
Yeah.
And so if they could pull it off where she is still leading the resistance or the rebel alliance from another ship, and we're hearing her voice, and it's not really Carrie Fisher, but it's somebody that sounds like Carrie Fisher, I'd be totally fine with that.
Yeah.
And every once in a while she shows up on a hologram or whatever. Yeah, that's a CG Carrie Fisher or whatever, but it's okay because it's a hologram. I find that to be respectful, but they were so adamant that we're not going to recreate her with the computer when she died that I guess they feel like they can't go back on that.
Well, and, you know, it could be footage from Force Awakens, but put her in a hologram while she's saying those lines or whatever.
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, their hands are tied. I do not envy them saying, how do we tell the same story we were going to tell? Because Leia is a big, big part of this franchise. And because she's gone and she died young, I people have a soft spot for her. I certainly do. And so, yeah, I don't want to see her just cast aside and say, oh, you know, Leia couldn't be here or whatever. General Leia sends her warmest regards. And then this character does all the stuff that Leia was going to do. But you also have to serve the story and recognize that this is the biggest franchise of all time. And this is the last episode, at least for the time being. And so that has to be more important. Boy, good luck, guys, with that. It's neat that they said she's going to be back. But I wonder, maybe that could have been a surprise to us.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if it's just a tiny little cameo and they're killing her off or she's off on some other world doing something too important to be in the middle of all this petty galactic civil war, then wouldn't that have been better for us to not know about when we went and saw the movie? That was rhetorical, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just trying to think of something to add. But yeah, I think we've kind of covered the possibilities there. A couple weeks later, there was a couple other announcements.
Okay.
Of a couple other people that'll be joining the cast. I don't know if you heard this news, but another friend of J.J. Abrams from Lost is Dominic Monaghan.
He's a hobbit.
Who played Charlie on Lost. He's going to be in the cast. And then Matt Smith, who was one of the doctors, has also joined the cast.
Yeah.
I'm guessing they're minor characters. Maybe more of the Knights of Ren, if I continue to go for my wish for that. But, you know, Matt Smith could be most of the British dudes or First Order guys or former Imperials. So he could definitely fit in with that.
There's also the idea of, you know, they're motion capture characters too, like Maz Kanata.
Oh, sure.
People that wouldn't even show up in a recognizable form. Simon Pegg as Unkar Plutt was absolutely unrecognizable, and yet he was in that suit.
Yeah.
He did that performance. And then, yeah, there are always droids or stormtroopers or alien, completely CG aliens that have voices. And the movie is far enough out at this moment when we're recording this that there could be people that that get brought on a year from now. And they're just, you know, voicing a stormtrooper. They're voicing this alien, Maz Kanata's love interest.
Yeah, bring Daniel Craig back for the stormtrooper role.
Yeah, see, that sort of stuff is great. I mean, according to Kevin Smith, the movie was, Force Awakens was done and being dubbed, you know, the ADR was being done. And he gets a call from J.J. Abrams and it's like, hey, you know, if you want to work for an afternoon, there's some lines that, you know, you could do and you have the chance to be a stormtrooper. And that was, you know, when the movie was already put together and they had placeholder dialogue for all these stormtroopers. And that sort of thing could happen to anybody. Well, I mean, I don't think it'll happen to us, but that's when it pays to, you know, be friendly with J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's all I got for casting news or things that we've heard.
And yeah, that's fine. There will be more as we get closer, but and so
as
yeah,
more comes in, I'll probably start shying away from learning about it. So,
yeah, that's a good point. We've talked about that and our fear of spoilers, but JJ is such a master at subterfuge and trying not to tip his hat, and that I feel like we could probably watch the last trailer. Right, you know, the one that comes out right before the movie comes out and not have too much spoiled. I bet you and I will still skip it. But, you know, like the last trailer that he did for Force Awakens was the one where it starts with a voice. It turns out to be Maz Kanata saying, "Who are you?" And Rey saying, "No one." And none of that was even in the movie. So you never know what they'll do and what they'll change. And I'm sure there will be reshoots, the dread word reshoots on this project as well.
Yeah.
At some point, the character names will get revealed and we'll be like, that girl, her first credit was 2015 and she was in an episode of Doctor Who. Her character's last name is Calrissian. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That'll be some fun stuff, too. As these little things start to slip out. And, eventually we'll get our first trailer. And eventually we'll get a title for it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Star Wars 9. We're sorry.
We're sorry? Oh, geez.
That was a joke.
Anyway, it seems like we since I've got you here, we ought to talk about some other things.
Definitely.
You right now are reading the Solo novelization, right?
I am, yeah.
And the two of us spoke one time, and we were both reading Star Wars books at the same time. I was reading Timothy Zahn's Thrawn, and you were reading the Solo novelization. Who was the writer for that?
That was actually Mer Lafferty.
No.
It is. That's one of the things that intrigued me to read it, is that Mer Lafferty is the author of that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's as big a surprise as Billy Dee Williams coming back for episode 9.
Yeah.
Huh.
So it's interesting to hear, you know, people talk about the novelization. They say, oh, Mer Lafferty, I don't know who that is. And they're, you know, kind of like, who is this person? And I'm like, I know who she is. I've known her, or at least I've known of her for a long time. So,
well, in the same way that people know us, because we're podcasters and we're personalities in a way, a very small fish in a big pond. And when you zoom out, you realize, oh, it's not a big pond at all. It's a puddle. I feel like I know Mer Lafferty because I've heard her voice so many times over the years. You know, I feel like she is a colleague. Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Great. Good for her. I read Playing for Keeps.
Sure. So did I.
And so it's just, yeah, somebody that I was already a fan of got that gig.
Yeah.
So how is the book? Remember when the Last Jedi novelization came out, and it was after the movie by a couple of months. It was just filled with all sorts of extras and scenes that weren't even in the screenplay, and just, you know, expansions and clarifications. Is this also like that?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten too far into it. I'm still on Corellia, so not a lot of major things, but just, yeah, a lot of details about Han's life there on Corellia.
Does it give an age for Han and Kira?
Not yet, no.
Then it never will.
Like I said, I've only listened to the first couple chapters, so.
Huh.
But yeah, it's been good so far.
Well, yeah, I want to know what you think, and whether I should check it out too. But knowing that it's Mer Lafferty, I almost feel, and is this weird that I feel like I ought to buy it to support her?
Yeah.
That is weird. Okay.
Well, maybe we can both read it and talk about it. But speaking of, I do have Thrawn as well. And
did you say Tron? Dude, don't watch it. If you've somehow managed for nearly 40 years to avoid Tron, oh my goodness, run for cover. You didn't mean Tron, did you?
No, Thrawn.
Oh.
T-H-R.
R-A-W-N.
Yes.
you have that.
So yeah, I for some reason I stopped listening to it. I was enjoying it. I listened to probably about three quarters of it. I just need to finish the last little bit. But I'm interested to hear what you think about the Thrawn novel.
Well, yeah, we could definitely talk about that for a couple of minutes. And I'll try and avoid spoilers, but it's a prequel book. It takes place before our introduction to Thrawn back in Heir to the Empire. And the thing that's amazing to me is that the Empire are the protagonists of this book. I would not have guessed that you could write a book where, yeah, the Galactic Empire are the good guys, but Thrawn is definitely a good guy, and he's got a young aide, a cadet, that's just starting out in the Imperial Navy, that becomes his translator and is by his side through the whole book, and he's kind of our point of view character.
Yeah.
But they're definitely part of the Galactic Empire, and they serve Emperor Palpatine. And, you know, it's an organization that we know to be evil from the very beginning of Star Wars. And so it's amazing to me that these are our good guys and that it works. But I was talking to my cousin about it yesterday, and I don't know that this is the same Thrawn that we knew in Heir to the Empire, because this is such a noble character, a decent character, a very thoughtful character that takes into consideration the people around him and saving lives rather than just using technological might. And gosh, I said I wasn't going to spoil it. I am going to spoil it. At the very end of the book, he's brought before Emperor Palpatine and made a grand admiral in the Empire.
Sure.
And it's clear that he recognizes that the Emperor is evil and that they're going to maybe not necessarily be on the same side, which is just, wow, I'm not sure that that's the Thrawn that we knew as the villain in the trilogy of books.
No,
he was a master tactician, and he was the Empire. He was the leader of what was left of the Empire. He was the bad guy.
And yeah, no, I think he definitely changed as a character between Heir to the Empire and this book. You know, he's been redesigned by Timothy Zahn to fit in to this new canon. And I really enjoyed seeing how all that came to place. And I really liked how the chapters, or most of the chapters, maybe all of them, started out with Thrawn just giving, you know, his rules or his philosophy on life and war and politics and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. As though we're reading a book. You know, these are excerpts from the Mein Kampf that Thrawn wrote later in life. It's just funny, though, because as the book progresses, we meet Imperials, and a lot of them are politicians, and politicians are evil. They will undercut the next person right there in front of them so that they can take their position, or they will blackmail, or they will lie, or they will allow someone to make a fatal mistake so that they can rise up and gain more power. And Thrawn just has nothing to do with that. He has no need for politics. He is a brilliant military commander, and he feels like that is enough. And they show that that's kind of a weakness for him, a stumbling block, that he doesn't understand politics, and that you have to suck up, and that you have to... You know, but
that's where he learns from his aide or whatever, and like you said, rises up the ranks with him.
Yes, but he rises up the ranks because he is so brilliant, because he's such a great tactician, because he wins, and he gives advice, and when his superiors listen to his advice, they succeed. And when they ignore it, they fail. And I think the Emperor recognizes that this is a great asset to have. And despite the fact that the guy doesn't understand politics, and, you know, the you scratch my back, I scratch yours mentality, he manages to advance. There's also a third major character who is a female.
Yes.
She's one of the villains from Star Wars Rebels. And we see her start out very naive and frankly innocent, and she becomes more and more corrupt until she becomes a villain on the level of Moff Tarkin or someone like that. And
now, did you recognize her character and her name when she first started?
Yeah, the character is Miranda Price, I want to say, or maybe it's Nurando with an N, or
yeah, it's like Arinda.
Arinda Price. Okay, well done. No, at first I didn't. But because it was Lothal, which is the planet where a lot of Star Wars Rebels takes place, or at least when it first starts, I was just like, huh, why Lothal? This must be important. And eventually I was just like, oh, you know, I know who this is. And
yeah, I had the same experience.
She is a super two-dimensional character on Rebels.
Yeah.
She's cowardly and nasty. You know, she's just a bureaucrat in the Empire. And that's fine because they're bad. But in this, yeah, she's much more layered, and there are chapters that are just her point of view, and you want her to succeed.
Yeah.
But she makes moral compromises, and they tend to add up.
Yeah, I really enjoyed her development, and I had the same experience. I was, you know, halfway through the book, and I'm like, oh, well, maybe not halfway, but at a certain point, I'm like, okay, I know who this is. And I really got into her development, and there was a point where she was on Coruscant and got in the wrong part of town or whatever and was in danger. I was really kind of intrigued and interested to see how this was going to get resolved and what was going to happen to her. I knew she'd survive, of course, but yeah, I really got into seeing her in the novel.
Anyhow, I was very entertained. I felt like it was a good book. They talk about an encounter that Thrawn had with a young Jedi named Anakin Skywalker. And I've asked a couple of people, I was like, was this from a Clone Wars episode? And the answer is no. This is new news, but it looks like it's going to be addressed at some point because there's a sequel to Thrawn that's already in bookstores. It looks like this is going to be a new Thrawn trilogy. And the second one is Thrawn and Darth Vader are assigned to a mission together. And so Thrawn being the genius that he is, I think he will eventually realize who he's dealing with and that they have met before.
Yeah, Thrawn Alliances, I think, is the name of that book.
No, oh, well done. But yeah, I recommend it. I really dug this book and it made me kind of want to reassess the Thrawn trilogy. And
I thought that as well. I was thinking, oh, maybe I should go back and read those Timothy Zahn's first trilogy in the Star Wars.
Yeah, and I would love to read the Vader Thrawn book. Just more insight into the personality of Vader and what goes on in his head. I don't know. I mean, that's something that we don't really get a glimpse into. Partly because, you know, he's not an actor. He's a helmet. You don't see his eyes. You don't see the expression and all that stuff. And like, what is he thinking in that scene where Luke talks to him on Endor, where the AT-AT drops Luke off? It's like there are several shots of Vader just like staring, standing. And if he were helmetless, I think we would know what he's thinking. But he's sort of a blank slate, and you project whatever you want or whatever John Williams tells you to project onto Vader in those scenes. We've talked many times that I would like to write stories with Vader in them, but which Vader is it? What? Who is Vader?
Well, that team up with Darth Vader thing worked really well in the Tarkin novel. So I think it'll work well with Thrawn as well.
Yeah, and the Tarkin novel was different from the Thrawn one in that, yes, Tarkin is the main character, but he's clearly a villain. It's kind of like reading Hannibal, the sequel to Silence of the Lambs, where it's like, okay, you know, Hannibal Lecter is probably the main character of that book, but he's bad. We root for him or whatever, but yeah, but there's no confusion as to the character here. And so, yeah, same thing with other books where I've read about villains. And I think if I were writing a Vader book, it would probably be a lot more like that, you know, a Boba Fett book. You write him as a villain who, you know, we like him, we root for him or whatever, because the people he's against are also bad or worse, or
it
would be best if they were absent from the galaxy.
You know, seeing these different characters interact with Darth Vader at different levels or whatever, you see a little bit more insight into not only what Darth Vader was thinking or doing, but their perception of him and their assessment of him and how he fits into everything. That's kind of a neat thing. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out with Thrawn Alliances.
Okay, well, I think we've certainly reached the end of my available memory on my recording device. but was there a third thing that we wanted to talk about?
It seems like there was more that we wanted to talk about, but I can't.
Okay, let me just finish up before I run out of space that... You know, every year in September, we have a comic book convention in our town. And I was really looking forward to it this year. My nephews were too. And one of the guests this year was Ian McDiarmid. And I was psyched to see him because I've never actually seen him at anything. The Star Wars celebrations I've gone to, he's recorded messages and they've played him for us. You know, he's like, I can't be there, but... And you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. But I wanted to get his autograph, but at this point, they've gotten so expensive. When I went to, you know, the first celebration where you could get autographs, it was $20 to get Carrie Fisher's autograph or the guy who played Reyes's autograph. It was the same price. But now in 2018, it was going to be $100 for Ian McDiarmid's autograph. And it's like, well... And so, you know, I was talking to my cousin and I was like, gosh, I would like to meet him. I would like to ask him a question. And that, and I got it into my head that, well, I could go to his panel and I could line up and ask him a question for free. And so I did do that. I felt like he was a very delightful personality. You know, he was there to entertain and he had cool stories. And you knew he had told the stories over and over again of playing the Emperor as a 30-something-year-old man and then being able to go on as a, you know, 50-something-year-old man and play him younger, which nobody can say they've had that particular experience. Nobody gets to do that. But it was just serendipity for casting a young man to play this very, very old character.
Yeah.
He told this story that was really fun, and I wish I'd gotten it on tape. Of the scene in Revenge of the Sith where he unleashes his lightning and all that stuff. And it's a scene I don't like at all because it's so over the top. My goodness, it becomes a cartoon. And he said on the day, you know, he delivered his line of, you know, ultimate power or whatever. And then he turned to George Lucas and said, what did you think, George? And George said, a little bigger. And he actually said to him, you mean a little smaller, don't you? And Lucas was like, no, I want it bigger. And he did not agree with George, but he gave this much, much bit broader performance. And that's the one that ended up in the movie. And I thought that was fun. Anyway, the guy's got a really cool voice and has fun stories. And the Emperor in Return of the Jedi is one of the greatest villains I've ever... I just love the Emperor and his performance. And so I just wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, no, I'm envious. I would have enjoyed to see that.
Yes, execute Order 66.
I said, George, are you sure?
And he said, do it.
Excellent. I think it was all a little more gruesome than you ended up seeing. A lot of young potential Jedi ended up on the cutting room floor.
So he was talking about the makeup chair being so, the makeup being so extensive that it was like a 6-hour process. And that
for Revenge of the Sith?
No, for Return of the Jedi.
Oh, okay.
And that he sort of was able to develop his character just sitting there in front of a mirror for that long, you know, looking at the eyes and looking at the you know, what they did with his mouth. And he decided that the Emperor's dialogue would come from very, very deep down in the stomach.
You will find that it is you who are mistaken about a great many things.
Anyhow, he decided that this was a character who loathed people. He was used to being alone. And to him, the word friendship was a dirty word. It was a laughable thing. Only weak people have friends.
Yeah.
Hence,
we are quite safe from your friends here.
But then it occurred to me while I was thinking about it that he calls Vader my friend twice in that movie.
Rise, my friend.
And now, my friend, I sense you wish to continue your search for young Skywalker. And if I had been the interviewer, I would have asked him, well, does he not consider Vader his friend? Or is this just a word that he tosses around, but he doesn't actually hold true meaning for him? How does he feel? Does he like Vader? Does he pity Vader? What are his feelings toward Darth Vader? Well, Marshall, what do you think that the Emperor felt toward Vader, and what was his plan involving Luke in Return of the Jedi?
You know, I always got the impression that the Emperor didn't have a fondness for him. He might have found some amusement in how evil and dark Darth Vader went, or Anakin went as Darth Vader.
Was he hoping that Luke would kill his father, and now he would have a young, virile apprentice?
I always kind of saw him using him as a tool, and if he would have died, he wouldn't have cared. Just like when Dooku was killed.
Dooku!
It's Dooku, yeah.
I think he was amused by the fact of how he was able to, you know, lie to Anakin and sucker him into totally embracing the dark side. You know, he had him in Revenge of the Sith, but then just digging it deeper, you know, after he was burned, after he was lost his limbs and everything, and had to be rebuilt as Darth Vader, as we know him in the original trilogy, you know, and that he, you know, he says, oh, you killed her, she died, you know, and I just digging that in. I think he's truly evil and just was using Darth Vader how he could. And if he killed Luke, then, well, that's fine. He'd be fine with continuing to have Vader by his side as well. But he always felt above all of his apprentices. And that's probably why he didn't see it coming when Darth Vader turned on him. That's my take on it.
But it was a great thing to go in when you're 37 and play a 120-year-old. And then to go backwards in time and play a 50-something-year-old when you were 50-something. I'd never done that before. And then to become 120 again, if that's what happens. But I don't know, age was never really a very important thing to George. It was what happened to the character. And I suppose the more hideous the face got, the stronger the evil was. That was what he was most interested in.
I think he was age 37 when he played the Emperor.
Wow.
I thought he was wholly believable as an old man. Like the way that he carried himself, you know, and I never really questioned that this was an old man. And then, you know, I'd see him in other stuff and be like, Ian McDonald. Oh my gosh, that is the Emperor. Weird. But it's just funny that they would choose a young man to play that part in Return of the Jedi, because I think I would have just cast, you know, a 70-year-old or 80-year-old or 90-year-old if you could find one. Like, for example, did you ever see Poltergeist 2, The Other Side?
Yeah.
The bad guy in Poltergeist 2 is like this creepy, crazy old preacher.
Yeah, and he comes to their door.
Yeah, and he goes, you're all gonna die in there, or something. Oh, but this guy was sick with terminal cancer. He was like weeks away from death. And they cast him, and holy smoke, this guy is terrifying. You remember that? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he actually passed away before the movie came out. But I remember just being scared to death of this guy. And it seems like you get somebody like that to play the Emperor, but they didn't.
Well, yeah, it's almost as if Lucas said, oh, when I do the prequels, I'll already have an actor who's perfect for the role.
Yeah, holy cow, you're right. You always hear the stories that he had it all planned out before he started filming, and then you see the prequels, and you realize, oh, that's not true. But yeah, casting a young man as the Emperor certainly supports that idea.
Well, thanks everybody for listening to this episode, and we'll be back again to talk about more Star Wars. But I guess for now, Rish, see you around, kid.
Young fool, only now at the end you understand. Good night.
Good night.
The Delusions of Grandeur podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. This means you can share it with anyone, but do not change it or sell it. Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
In Return of the Jedi, you have so much range, from very, very small all the way to fully armed and operational. You know, it's so big. And then there are other times he almost seems kindly. How did you determine how big you were going to go, or how subtle, how restrained from moment to moment?
Yeah, well, you sort of, that's the phrase, you sort of play it moment to moment in the hope that, you know, it's pieced together, it'll all make some kind of sense. It makes me laugh to think of it now. On the big transformation scene where he screams, "Don't worry, I'm not going to do it now," unlimited power. When I thought, this is much too much, really. It's a movie, you know. It's not a gigantic auditorium like this one, where I could probably do something like that without the microphone. But George, no. I'm too expensive. George said, "No, it'll take it." I'm not sure if it's entirely right, but anyway, I gave him what he wanted, and I went beyond the top, over the top, and on the other side.
Yeah. But it's amazing, though, because in the Phantom Menace, at the very end of the movie, where you can just put your hands on Anakin's shoulders.
Yes.
It's so subtle, but yet so evil at that moment. It's incredible.
George decided later on to include that scene. He wasn't going to have him meet the young boy at all. And we did it on one sunny day in London, in the back lot, really. I remember I was more worried about how my week would look like under daylight, and I had reason to be, than anything else. But he said, just, you know, he's just a nice kid, just say hi. So I just said hi, and it was a little suggestion. Whereas in the big scene, you wanted me to go very far. As you say, in this scene, you wanted it to be really hidden, really subtle.